Okay, I'd like to give a talk about the moduli space of hypermodal splits. And the relevant moduli space is going to be got from either compactifying the type 2A string on a Calabi-Yau 3 fold. This is closely related to F-theory on a Calabi-Yau 3 fold. In fact, for purposes of the moduli space of hypermodal splits, it's the same thing. And the other way that we're going to view this is as the heterotic string compactified on a K3 surface times a 2 torus. Now, the first thing I should say is that this...
F-theory on a 3 fold?
Yeah. Okay. So this would be, in brackets here, I should put this is heterotic on a K3. That corresponds to that, and that corresponds to that. Now, I should say that the nature of this talk is kind of work in progress, so I warn you that this talk will be much less polished than the other talks that you've encountered so far in the last week or two. I should also say that a lot of this talk is going to be based on some work by Freeman, Morgan, and Witten. And by Donaghi. And anything I say which isn't in those papers, which won't be a great deal, is stuff I've done with Dave Morrison. Okay, now, there's also going to be various details about the moduli spaces of vector bundles. I believe Ron is giving a talk next week, so I'm happy to gloss over various of the subtleties that will crop up about vector bundles. So I'm going to be vague on various parts, but hopefully Ron next week can fill in any gaps that I miss. Okay, so I should explain what I mean by these things I've written down so far. Well, the idea is that we're going to take a string theory and a basic string theory always lives in 10 dimensions. And then I'm going to, now, this kind of string theory might be a type 2A superstring, it might be a type 2B superstring, it might be the E8 cross U8 heterotic string, or it might be the spin 32 over Z2 heterotic superstring. So I take any of those four strings and I compactify it on a 6 manifold. Well, a 6-dimensional space, it may or may not be a manifold. So I obtain a theory in 4D, and what we're interested in is the moduli space of these 4D theories. Now, in many ways, of course, the moduli space of the 4D theories that we're looking at will be also the moduli space of the 6-fold on which I did the compactification of the string theory. But there's a little bit more data which goes to the definition of the 4D physics. So we don't just have moduli which you'd normally associate with deformations of the 6-fold. And these are very important, these extra degrees of freedom. So I'm going to list exactly what data is needed in order to compactify the type 2A string, type 2B, E8 cross E8 cross spin 32 over Z2 on a corresponding 6-dimensional space. So the first thing I'll start with down here. The first thing I'll start with is the type 2A superstring on a Calabi-Yau 3 fold. So this is 2A. And I'm going to compactify it on a 3 complex dimensional space, which I'll call X. So it's vanishing first-gen class, the tangent bundle, and its Kähler. So it's a Calabi-Yau threefold. Now, the degrees of freedom that I have in here, well, the first thing I'm going to describe, I have a dilaton and an axion. These are two real degrees of freedom that the string has in it, and together these form a kind of complex number. And so this is one complex modulus in our four-dimensional physics. And the dilaton controls what we call the string coupling. So as I vary this modulus, I make the string strongly coupled or weakly coupled, depending on which direction I go. Next degree of freedom, a Ricci flat metric on X. If I vary the Ricci flat metric, then I vary my theory in 4D. Now, I don't need, of course, to express exactly what the metric is. As far as the moduli space of this Ricci flat metric is concerned, I can just concern myself with the complex structure of X. And the cohomology class of the Kähler form, which I'll call J. So given a complex structure in J, then that specifies my Ricci flat metric. The next degree of freedom.
Just out of curiosity, are there examples where you could have a Ricci flat metric which is not Q?
Well, for purposes of what I want to do, I need it to be Kähler, yeah. I suppose you could do a non-Kähler Ricci flat space, but that wouldn't be the kind of theory that I want, right, yeah. The next degree of freedom is the B field. The B field is an element of H upper 2 X, comma, R mod Z. Okay. So this is a two form. And what we normally do is that we take this real degree of freedom here, and we add it to the real degree of freedom here, and we form an object called B plus IJ, and this is called the complexified Kähler cone. So this is the complexified Kähler form. So everything so far is complex. And lastly, I have the Ramon-Ramon fields. Which I'll call R. And R is an element of, well, it's similar to the B field. It's H odd X, comma, R mod Z. Okay. Now, I can use the R field that I've got here. I can use these real degrees of freedom, and I can kind of mix them up with my deformation of complex structure. And these kind of, well, let me say, they quaternionify the complex structure. In a similar way that I use the B field to complexify my Kähler form, I can use these objects here to give myself a quaternionic Kähler manifold. Which whose degrees of freedom are given by the Ramon-Ramon fields and the complex structure. So, writing this all out, my moduli space, I claim, looks something like MH cross MV, where this is a Kähler manifold. It's actually a special Kähler manifold. And it includes the... I should also say I included the dilaton and axion down here as well. I'll just say that again. This special Kähler manifold consists of the complexified Kähler form. And I have a quaternionic Kähler manifold. And in here I have the complex structure of X. and I have the dilaton and axion. Dilaton and axion. And I've got the Ramon-Ramon fields. Now, the moduli space, as I've written down, is not given exactly by these degrees of freedom as you would think of them in classical geometry. There are quantum corrections to some of these moduli. In particular, see if I can do this without making a large mess. The B plus IJ receives some quantum corrections in order alpha prime. What I mean by this is that these are corrections which will go away if I go to very large distance scales. These corrections are induced by effects which have to do with finite string tension, if if you like. These are stringy type corrections, and they go away if I go to very large distances. So when I say that the complexified Kähler form is the thing which spans the special Kähler moduli space, I only really mean that in the classical sense of what I mean by the Kähler form in this B field, when things are very big. If things aren't very big, then there'll be some alpha primes corrections to B plus IJ. Similarly, there will be some corrections on this side, but these corrections are lambda-type corrections. And by lambda-type corrections, I mean that they come from string coupling effects. So these are corrections which will go away when the string is very, very weakly coupled. The modulus there is the dilaton. I mean that when this object here, when the dilaton goes to, well, depending if you call it minus infinity or zero, whichever way you have a definition of a dilaton, when you go to the weakly coupled regime, the picture I gave here is exact. I exactly have the complex structure and these and this R field here. But if I'm at non-zero string coupling, then I expect things to be warped around a little bit. Well, two of these. So I can't stick my finger on which two. The way of saying. Well, there will be natural twos in certain limits, but in general, if I'm just an interior point in the moduli space, then it's just any two, but it's just some special two. Well. Yeah, I mean, certainly if I want to split off an actual two of these as a two torus, so I get the integer structure to be compatible, then I need to be at a special point in the moduli space. Yeah. So that's the list of data which I require for the moduli space of type 2A strings on a Calabi-Yau 3 fold. Oh, I should say, by the way, that the subscript H and the subscript V up there, in supersymmetry language, these are called moduli in the hypermultiplet, and these are moduli in the vector multiplet. So the H and V are for hypermultiplet and vector multiplet. So much for type 2A. Type 2B on a Calabi-Yau 3 fold. I'll call it X again. Well, this is similar to the type 2A picture. The dilaton and the axion. Again, this gives me a complex number, as before. Again, I have a Ricci flat metric. And again, I have a B field. In fact, the only thing at first sight that looks any different is the Ramon-Ramon field lives in H even X comma also. So it's very similar to the last time. And except now the wavelength pair up is a little bit different. See if I get this right. Well, the Ramon-Ramon fields again live in here. But this time, actually, my...
Aren't you double-counting the axion?
No.
H0?
This is the four-dimensional axion, not the ten-dimensional axion. H0 is the ten-dimensional axion. Yeah, this is the four-dimensional. So I've got the Ramon-Ramon fields contribute to the quaternionic Kähler moduli space. Now actually I have B plus IJ that's in here, and my complex structure lives over here. And my dilaton axion also down here. So these fields pair up in a different way to build up my quaternionic Kähler manifold and my special Kähler manifold. And again, I have lambda corrections on this side. So again, my quaternionic Kähler manifold gets warped once I start taking into account the fact that my string might have a non-zero coupling. And again, the alpha prime corrections will change what I thought of as the Kähler form of the B field. But in this case, I'll also change what I think of as the RR field. Yeah, in the case of the type 2B string, yes, you can think of it that way, because there's actually a symmetry. There's a S duality which takes the coupling to one over the string coupling to one over the string coupling, and you do actually exchange the B field with one of the R fields. So yeah, it's very similar. Okay, so now at this point I can say something about mirror symmetry. I've built up these moduli spaces. I've just listed various properties. I haven't proved anything yet, of course. Now, a string theorist definition of what mirror symmetry is simply that the type 2A string compacted by on a Carvalho threefold X is the same thing as the type 2B string on the mirror of X, Y, say. X and Y are mirrors. So if if I can find a pair X and Y such that the type 2A compacted on X is the same thing as the type 2B on Y, then X and Y are mirrors. So if X and Y are mirrors, then these data that I've written down should be exchanged. Now, the thing that everybody knows about mirror symmetry is that the complex structure deformations are interchanged with the deformations of the complexified Kähler form. Well, that's certainly happening. The moduli space of vector multiplets here was in terms of complex structure. Up there, it's the complexified Kähler form. The other thing which is just as important is the way that we exchange the H odd of the Calabria threefold with H even down here. So there's a very interesting property of mirror symmetry as defined in string theories, that it exchanges the integer structure that I have in the H upper even with the integer structure that I have in H upper odd. Now, the important thing to remember, however, is that I told you that there were alpha prime corrections to the Ramon-Ramon field. So this suffers from alpha prime corrections. And this integer structure that I'm talking about down here is only really the integer structure that you get from classical geometry if I'm at the large radius limit. So what I think of as a, say, a zero cycle or a two cycle or a four cycle is only really the right thing in this object if my Calabria threefold is very large. When the Calabria threefold is not very large, then these things might start mixing. And this is a very arm-wavy way of seeing how counting rational curves comes in. The fact that H0, which is a point in here, starts to mix in a bit with H2, which are two cycles. So the notion of the points kind of starts to get mixed up with the notion of rational curve. So that's a very arm-wavy saying of why mirror symmetry counts rational curves. So that's a very rough introduction to mirror symmetry. Now I want to play the same game, but now I'm going to use the third string theory, not the type 2A string or the type 2B string. I'm going to have another string theory. And I want to say if I can make similar statements that I could say about mirror symmetry, but now for another string. And I want to keep the type 2A, so I'll erase the thing at the bottom. So now I'm going to consider, well, I'll call it the G heterotic string. Where G is either B8 cross the 8th. To be strictly accurate, I think what we've always been calling the E8 cross the 8th string should be called this. Because it seems as though these days we can actually exchange these two E8s. So what we used to call the E8 cross the 8th string perhaps should be called this now. Or spin 32 of the sensory. So G is either one of those. And I take the G heterotic string and I compactify it on product of two objects, S times E. S is a K3 surface and E is a two-torus, or an elliptic curve, whatever you want to call it. Two-torus with a complex structure. So what's the corresponding data for this? I wrote down all these things for the type 2A string. Now I go through the same business again and list all the degrees of freedom that this object now has. Well, again, I have the dilaton and the axion. I also have a Ricci flat metric. And I also have my B field, as before. And now these live on S times E. And the new thing that the heterotic string introduces is Yangnall's G bundle. So what we have now, in addition to the Ricci flat metric and the B field, rather than having these R fields, which we had for the type 2A and type 2B string, instead of those, we're going to have some bundle structure. A principal G bundle, I guess, or a Yang-Mills bundle. I want to maintain that product structure. Well, there are some kind of extremal light transitions that if everything's smooth, then the product structure is maintained. But I can go through some points in moduli space which would break the product structure. Right. Right. Fine. Yeah. Now, I claim that I can make this theory look awfully like my type 2A and type 2B theory. So in particular, I should end up with MH times MV again. Well, the way it's going to factorize this time is actually MH is going to be associated with my K3 surface and MV is going to be associated with my two torus.
What assumptions are you making
on this G bundle? Well,
does it have a connection?
Yeah, yeah. That's a Yang-Mills connection. Yeah, sure. Or I can make the same statement about it being a stable bundle if you want to translate it into the algebraic language. Okay. It's the usual connection you put on a Kähler. If I've got a Kähler manifold, I can define a natural Yang-Mills bundle on it.
Yes,
yeah, sure. Yeah, permission. Yeah, sure.
Do you have any requirements on
the I'm going to, well, I need it to satisfy the Yang-Mills equations, and there are some topological restrictions, such as the Chern classes of the bundle, which I'll impose. That should fix it up to some moduli. And it's the result of moduli space is now what I want to look at. Okay. So first of all, look at the Ricci flat metric and the B field on the K3 surface and the two torus. Well, that factorizes. I can either deform the K3 surface or I can deform the two torus. and I end up with a quaternionic Kähler manifold. If I look at the moduli space of my K3 surface S, that's something you can prove in string theory, that the resultant moduli space is a quaternionic Kähler manifold. And similarly, if I look at the moduli space of the two torus, I find I get a special Kähler manifold. So deformations of the space itself factorize naturally into a quaternionic Kähler manifold and a special Kähler manifold. Now I should look at the deformations of the G bundle. Well, I'm going to assume, now this isn't necessarily true, but the condition that I'll impose is going to come back. I'm going to assume that this G bundle factorizes nicely into a particular G bundle over S times a G bundle over E. So I can look separately at the deformations of the G bundle on S and at the deformations of the G bundle on E. Now, if I ask what are the deformations of these bundles on a K3 surface, well, this is a hyper-Kähler manifold. So this is the bundle on my K3 surface S. And I get, well, bundles on a two torus, I guess they're just flat. I get some moduli space on the bundle on the elliptic curve E. So I can combine all these together. I can consider the deformations of the K3 surface together with the deformations of the bundle on it to build up some bigger moduli space. And I get that MH is the moduli space of... the K3 surface plus its bundle, and I get that MV is the moduli space of the elliptic curve plus its bundle. So that's how this is factorized now. I've got all the data from the K3 surface in MH and all the data of the vector of the two toruses in MV, except for a caveat which I'm about to mention in a second. Okay. So this is almost true, what I've just said. Now I get various quantum corrections. Oh, I've left something out. I've left out the dilaton and the axion. The dilaton and the axion is in here. Now, the various quantum corrections, I'm going to have a spin coupling correction here. And it appears that I have an alpha prime correction here. This alpha prime correction here is yet to be understood properly, but if I have time at the end, I'll be able to justify that it really has to be there. So again, if my K3 surface is very big, then this is exactly what we said it was. If the K3 surface isn't big, then there'll be some effects from the world sheet which will start warping it around. And here, this is what I said it was, as long as the string is weakly coupled. If the string is non-zero coupling, then it's going to start to be warped around. So now we want an equivalent statement to mirror symmetry. I'll make it here. Go on, I should list the names. The first ones were done by Katcher and Vaffer. And a similar construction, not quite what we're doing here, but something very similar was done by Ferrara, his name I can never spell. Ferrara, Harvey, Strominger, and Vaffer. Okay, the idea is very similar to mirror symmetry. I take a type 2A string and I compactify it on a Calabi-Yau threefold X, and I say this is the same thing as, hopefully, I can find something such that the heterotic string compactified on S and E. Now, the something I need to choose here, of course, is the vector bundle structure. Given a Clavier threefold here, hopefully there is some choice of vector bundle down here, which will be such that the hadronic string compactified on that will be the same as the type 2A string compactified on that. So it's similar to mirror symmetry, in as much as I'm finding two string theories which are equivalent, but rather than finding two manifolds which are mirror now, rather than having a Clavier threefold X as mirror to a Clavier threefold Y, I'm saying the Clavier threefold X is dual in some sense to a vector bundle on K3 times T2. And there are lots of Claviers and there are lots of vector bundles, so hopefully things might pair up nicely. Now, one quick statement. If I phrase this carefully, my moduli space in the heterotic side is factorized nicely. I can control the K3 surface and I can control the 2 torus separately. And what I'm going to try and, what I'm free to do if I so wish, is to take the area of this 2 torus to the infinite here. I can scale this 2 torus up. Now, roughly speaking, physically what that would do was it would decompactify this thing. Rather than having the heterotic string on the K3 surface times the 2 torus, so I'd have the heterotic string on just the K3 surface. So in this limit, I would have what looks like a 6-dimensional theory, but rather than a 4D theory. Now, when I do this decompactification of the 2 torus here, it's going to do something weird to my type 2A string on X. Now, you can take this as a definition, or if you've got a different definition, you can try and prove it. What changes up here is that I rename type 2A theory F theory. Okay, this limit of the type 2A theory is what people call F theory. Now, that's one possible definition of what F theory is. Instead, you can have a definition in terms of the type 2B string, where you can prove that they're the same kind of F theory. So I claim that F theory compactified on X, being dual to the heterotic string on a K3 surface, is really a subset of what I'm doing here. This is the more general picture in 4D. Now, I need to add one caveat. One thing I said, I cheated. If I do this decompactification to 6-dimensional physics rather than 4-dimensional physics, I have two kinds of moduli. I have a hypermultiplet. Well, that's what I would expect, because I meant to have all the deformations that I had for the K3 surface left, which are the hypermultiplets. I also have some other moduli called tensor multiplets, however. And it turns out that those tensor multiplets, which are really to do with the K3 surface, if I go back down to 4 dimensions, live in the vector moduli space. So when I told you that all the vector moduli space came from the 2 torus, I was actually lying. I should have said that there are some tensor moduli which might come from the heterotic string on the K3 surface, which will contribute to the vector multiplet moduli space. Now, these tensor multiplets are weird things from the heterotic string point of view. And in simple perturbative models, you don't have any. So in simple cases, I didn't lie. But strictly speaking, you should worry that this MV here... I have one. Okay, I have one, but I've really included that in the dilaton axiom system.
But actually, it's one. The case it should
have gone. No, that's the 6-dimensional picture, I think. Yeah. I'm doing the 4-dimensional picture. Right. Right. Well, as we said, it doesn't really it doesn't factorize globally. If I have a nice smooth bundle, then it does factorize. But there are boundary points in the moduli space where it doesn't factorize. So it's not really a global factorization. It's just if I'm on one local, if I'm locally on one component of the moduli space and everything's nice and smooth, then I. Generically, I would take E8 and I would divide it up into two groups. I'd say it contains SU3 times E6. So I'd wind the SU3 bundle around the K3 surface, and I'd wind the E6 bundle around the T2, say. So I could only switch Wilson lines on for E6, as an example. Now, when I switch all those Wilson lines off, so the E6 can now be wound around the K3 surface, that's when the factorization would break down. Okay, now I think I've got a little bit more old stuff to do. I mean, all the stuff I've said so far is fairly old. I need to do one more historical statement. I'm going to try and put some constraints on what kind of Calabi-Yau threefold that I have. Now, the first constraint that I'll say is I want the heterotic string to be weakly coupled. And by weakly coupled, I mean weakly coupled in string tension. And I want the heterotic string to be weakly coupled, hopefully at the same time, if I tune the somewhere in the moduli space, I want it to be true that the heterotic string is weakly coupled at the same time as the 2A string is weakly coupled. But in this sense, I mean alpha. So when the heterotic string is weakly coupled in a stringy sense, I want the type 2A string to be weakly coupled in the fact that X is big sense. Now, this isn't... If we don't impose this constraint, we can't really get anywhere. So I need to impose this constraint. And you can work through the consequences of this statement. And it turns out that it says that X is a K3 vibration. So I have a map from X to some space I'll call B. Well, if X is simply connected, then B must be simply connected. So this B is CP1. So I've got one constraint for my Calabi-Yau threefold. It must be a K3 vibration. This follows just by insisting that this happens. Right. At no time when heterotic string is weakly coupled can the type 2A manifold be small, right? Right. I'm assuming that there is some point in moduli space where I can find them both weakly coupled at the same time. So when X is big at the same time that the heterotic string is weakly coupled.
Do you have any idea what
you're missing? Oh, I'm sure I am missing examples, but those examples I really don't know how to systematically construct dual pairs. In that case.
So we need coupling this infinite distance in the dry string, right? So are there examples of infinite distance points that aren't large manifolds for type 2A?
I have to be careful which metric I'm using. Yes. Yeah, because what I'm saying is that... Oh, no, I guess... Yeah, but if you use the corrected metric, they're always a finite distance away, I think. Oh, actually, that's unproved. I don't know. There is a conjecture which says that the only infinite distance ones and the corrected metric are geometric phases. I'm not sure if anybody... Isn't that... No one's proven that, is that right? When I include the alpha prime corrections... The non-geometric phases always come in to be a finite distance away once I look at Wilshire Dinsenthal. Anyway, we can talk about this later. So that's one condition I want to impose. The second condition, well, I already imposed it. I said that the bundle factorized nicely. My vector bundle on K3 times a 2 torus was really a vector bundle on K3 times a vector bundle on a 2 torus. That's a condition. I need to find out what the corresponding statement about my Calabi-Yau threefold is. Well, again, with a bit of work, you can show that. Okay, so if my vector bundle on S times E, oh, can't use E, V, S times E, is the same thing as some vector bundle on S times the vector bundle on E, then this implies that X is an elliptic vibration with a section. So I have another vibration where x goes to some complex surface, and I'll call that complex surface sigma. So the fiber of this is an elliptic curve, the fiber of this is a K3 surface. So let me try and, at this point I can... Right. Right. And this is a condition. I mean, in order to decompactify my two torus, if I wanted to go to F-theory, I would have to have this condition. So F-theory needs a Clavier threefold, which is an elliptic vibration with a section. So let me try and do a sketch of X. So X looks a little bit like this. I have some complex surface that I'll call sigma. So I'll draw complex dimensions as real. So this is a two complex dimensional space. And a typical example that you might choose for this complex surface is a Hertzebruch surface, F subscript n, say. So I can vary the integer n here, and it gives me different complex surfaces, all of which look like P1 bundles over P1, but twisted in by different integers. And my Calabi-Yau threefold is an elliptic vibration over this space. So on every point on the blackboard, I have a two torus. But it's not a vibration where the two torus fiber is always smooth. There'll be some points where the two torus degenerates. So there'll be some locus in here, which is much more messy than I've just drawn. Where the fiber goes bad. So over these points, the fiber goes bad. And the fiber goes even more bad when I'm at a singularity of this line that I've just drawn. An interesting point is this line never crosses itself, but it does do that kind of thing. Sorry? Generically, there are no isolated points, right. And generically, it never does this either. Okay. But it can have cusps. So that's my picture of my Calabi-Yau threefold X. And do I have time? Well, I'll just draw in a couple of dotted lines. There's this Hertzebruch surface. I can draw in a curve along there, which I might call this section. Let's call this curve C0. C0 intersected with itself is minus n. That can be my definition of n, the self-intersection of that section of the Hertzebruch surface. Another class I can have, I can put in a vertical P1, and I can call this f. Since Hertzebruch surface is a P1 vibration, the intersection of f with itself is 0. Because that's the fiber. I can move the fiber parallel to itself. It's the fiber in the Hertzebruch surface. And the canonical bundle for a, well, minus the anti-canonical bundle for a Hertzebruch surface is minus twice the class of that plus 2 plus n times the class of that. And to get a Calabi-Yau threefold, I then impose that the class of the discriminant, which is delta here, must be minus 12k. So long as the homology class, if you like, if the curve that I've just drawn here is in the class which is minus 12 times that, then the space I end up with after doing this elliptic vibration is a Calabi-Yau threefold. Now, I want to try and match the hypermultiplet moduli space between my type 2A string and my heterotic string. So I can take a I can take a, I can take, for example, the Khatri-Vafa conjectured pair. I can take a particular Calabi-Yau threefold and a particular vector bundle on a K3 surface times the torus, and I can work out what their moduli spaces look like. I can work out M subscript H, the hypermultiplet moduli space, and I ask if they're the same. Well, the dimensions are the same, but the spaces are certainly quite different. Well, that shouldn't be too surprising, since I said there were quantum corrections to these spaces. So it's only if we can get rid of these quantum corrections that these spaces should look the same. So on both the type 2a side and the heterotic side, I need to go to some boundary of the moduli space where my quantum corrections have vanished. Well, in the type 2a string, my moduli space M subscript H received, let's call lambda corrections. So if my string wasn't weakly coupled, then my moduli space of hypermultiplets wasn't quite what I thought it was. But I want to make it, but I want to go to the boundary where it is exact, so I need to make the type 2a string infinitely weakly coupled. So I ask, okay, if I vary this moduli to make the type 2a string infinitely weakly coupled, what is the heterotic string going to do? And the answer is, so put lambda going to zero. Now, if the K3 surface that my heterotic string is compactified on, if SH is an elliptic vibration with a section, then the area of the section goes to infinity. Or the area of the base, if you want to think about it that way. So as my type 2a string becomes infinitely weakly coupled, my heterotic string lives on a K3 surface, which I can think of as elliptic vibration over P1. That P1 gets really, really big. So I get a big, fat-looking K3 surface. It's got a great big, fat base. The elliptic fiber doesn't need to be infinitely large at this stage, but the base needs to be big. So that's my, so that's where I go in the moduli space if I want to make the type 2a string weakly coupled. So I do that, and again I look at my two moduli spaces, and I ask if they're the same. And the answer is no, they're not the same. So I need to do a little bit more. And as I said earlier, that's because the heterotic moduli space is also corrected. So in the heterotic... Yeah. Right, I think so, yeah. I'm fairly sure that they don't match up. They definitely will match up after this, and I'm 99% sure they don't match up before I do this. So in the heterotic string, MH receives alpha prime corrections. So, in order to get rid of those, I need to make my K3 surface very big. Now, I've already made the base big. To make the type 2a string weakly coupled, I had the K3 over this great big base. So I need to make the elliptic fiber of the K3 surface big as well. Now, when I make the elliptic fiber of the K3 surface very big, this will do nasty things to my Calabi-Yau threefold. So my Calabi-Yau threefold is going to go under some horrible contortion as I go to this limit. And let me write down what the contortion looks like. And now everything should match up. Now, what happens is that this single Hertzebruch surface is going to break in half. So rather than being one complex surface, it's now two complex surfaces intersecting along a curve. each of these, now I just had a single Hertzebruch surface down there. It turns out that each of these is the same Hertzebruch surface Fn, except that for one of them, I had C0, where C0 dot C0 was minus n, If I put the corresponding line, the section that's disjoint from the intersection up here, I'd find that this one, let's call it C1, C1, not C1, that's that. If you go through the geometry and find that happen. Yeah, it's the same Fn, but down here I had, well, if n's positive, I had the isolated section. But in the top Fn, the isolated section lives in the intersection here, and the one that's disjointed is the one that's self-intersection plus n. So, in a way, it's like Fn and F minus n here. But anyway, it's broken into two halves. So I now have an elliptic vibration over this. Now, this is very singular. In fact, if I do an elliptic vibration over this, it should be clear what I've got. So I've got an elliptic vibration over one complex surface here. So I've got one threefold, coin x1. Let's call this sigma 1 and sigma 2. So over sigma 1, I have some complex threefold. And over sigma 2, I have some complex threefold, x2. And they intersect along the elliptic vibration over this curve here, which is a complex twofold. So I have a complex surface that I'll call S star. So S star is the complex surface of intersection of x1 and x2. Now, I can look at the way that the discriminant locus followed this transition through, and what we'll find is that it's living down here again, and it's living up here again. But what's important is that it intersects this line of intersection 24 times. Yep. Yeah, this is an infinite distance degeneration in the moduli space of complex structure. I've done a deformation in the complex structure of my Calabi-Yau threefold, and I've got an infinite distance. So this is a highly degenerate Calabi-Yau threefold.
So you've essentially decompactified your heterotic theory.
Right. I've taken the volume of the K3 surface. I need to be very big to get rid of all the alpha prime corrections. Whether I've decompactified it or not is. I think it has been very big rather than decompactified, so that I don't have any alpha, so I don't have any Rothschild instance on-site corrections. Okay, so oh yeah, as I was just going to say, if I look carefully at the geometry here, I find that this discriminant locus goes through here 24 times, and you can use that to show that the Euler characteristic of this object is 24, and indeed this is a K3 surface. So I've turned my Calabi-Yau threefold into two threefolds intersecting along a K3 surface. Both of these Calabi-Yau threefolds are Fano. Both of these threefolds are Fano. No.
They're
generalized Fano. Okay. I'll take your word. So what I now claim, and you can justify this to a large extent, is that the K3 surface that I've got from these two intersecting threefolds, as far as complex structure is concerned, is the same K3 surface as the heterotic string was compactified on. Okay? So this looks very good as far as matching the moduli spaces up now is concerned. I can deform the K3 surface that the heterotic string lives on, and I should be able to match it up nicely with deformations of this, because I actually have a K3 surface here. So I just assume that they're the same K3 surface. So that bit of the moduli space is working out perfectly. Now, I have other deformations here, of course. I have deformations of x1 and x2. Those deformations, hopefully, will correspond to deformations of E8 bundles. Each one of them will be one of the
E8 bundles. K3
right, certainly as far as complex structure is concerned. We've kind of rescaled it back down to finite size. In the hedronic string, I had an infinitely large K3 surface. But I claim that as far as complex structure is concerned, it's the same K3 surface as I've got here. Now, x1 and x2, those represent the E8 bundles, I claim. I don't really have time to go through it. I have less time than I thought I would. But I think Ron will go into detail about how you represent the E8 bundles by the data that's in these two threefolds here. So the data that's in those two threefolds is certainly there. So I can match up the bundle data too. Now what I want to do is to try and match up some integer data. And this is where life starts getting interesting. I mean, one thing I've not mentioned so far is the B field on the K3 surface. Cool. We've spoken about the complex structure and the caliform of the K3 surface and the vector bundle on it. But it's got a B field there. The B field's actually very interesting because that has integer structure, which was so important in mirror symmetry. So let's see if I can find what the B field's doing. Well, remember, the Ramon-Ramon fields they lived in HRs of X, which is actually the same as H3 for a Calabi-Yau threefold, because H3 is the only non-vanishing odd cohomology group. Our Ramon-Ramon fields came from that for the type 2A. So what's interesting is the third cohomology of this degenerated space. So I'm going to get moduli for all of H3 of this Calabi-Yau threefold. Now, going to the complex structure limits when I've degenerated the Calabi-Yau threefold here, I've almost certainly lost a bit of that H3. But I certainly haven't lost all of it. There should be some left over. So I should ask, well, what's left over in that H3 that I can identify in terms of the heterotic string? Well, there's a simple way of picturing how we build up the group of... Well, let's go to three cycles. Let's think in terms of homology rather than cohomology to build up H3 of this object. Well, let's draw it again. Got X1 and X2. Now, if I give you a three cycle, if I give you an element of H3... of X2, then that certainly is an element of H3 of the union of X1 with X2. Okay, so we certainly have the three cycles which are in X1 or X2 are certainly in the H3 of the total space. So I've...
Kernel, right?
Sorry?
I could have a kernel.
Well, the only thing I've got to worry about, I think, is that if I have another one over here, I'd better not count them separately. So if it restricts to one here, then it would let me transport it through there and I'd be overcounting. Right, because there is no H3 in the K3 surface. So actually all of these count. Okay, so any three cycle that lives in either X1 or X2 will be maintained as a three cycle in my final picture. Now, it turns out that these are all part of the counting of the moduli of the vector bundles. This is the E8 bundle kind of modulus, which I don't really want to talk about now. There are some other interesting cycles, however, which live in H3. Suppose I have a cycle in here. Suppose I put a cycle in here, and this cycle is in H2 of X. So I have a homologically non-trivial cycle that's living in the intersection of X1 and X2. But suppose that if I embed this in the... if I think of this as a cycle in H1 or H2, it now is trivial. In other words, there is some three cycle inside H2, which is the boundary, which has as a boundary that two cycle. And suppose the same is true for X1, that there is a three chain in X1 whose boundary is given by that two cycle. Then from this picture you can see that this builds up a three cycle inside H1 plus H2. So if I have a two cycle that's homologically non-trivial inside my K3 surface, but is trivial when I embed it into the X1 or X1 or X2 space, then this will build up a three cycle in X1 plus X2. So the homologically non-trivial cycles in my K3 surface might well contribute towards H3 and therefore might contribute towards the RR fields here. So we want the two cycles. Well, let's put it this way. We want the kernel of the map of H2 of S star into H2 of S of X, X1 or X2, XI. So. Okay. Anything that's in that kernel will give us a contribution to H3. Now, we should ask, well, what is that kernel in terms of the K3 surface? What cycles in that K3 contribute? Well, it turns out it's the transcendental cycles. Transcendental cycles. And there are 20 of them. So if I think of my K3 surface, I've got it as an elliptic vibration. I clearly have a two-cycle coming from the base and a two-cycle coming from the fiber. I claim all the 20 other cycles. Remember, there are 22 cycles in K3. The 20 other cycles, other than the base and the fiber, are the 20 cycles which give me this. Okay. Yeah. That's a generic point in the moduli space. Now, the B field, of course, on the K3 surface almost there. The B field on the K3 surface was an element of H2 of the K3 surface in that. Now, I can therefore see that there's a natural way of embedding this B field moduli space into the space of the Ramon-Ramon fields in the Calabi-Yau threefold. So this embeds into the Ramon-Ramon fields in X, which is in H3. Well, I should say, just the transcendental part of this, I should say. So some of the B fields, well, most of them, 20 out of 22, their integer structure coming from the second cohomology of the K3 surface, I can embed into the integer structure coming from the third cohomology of the Calabi-Yau threefold. Mm-hmm.
Do you mean the transcendental cycle or the complement of the two optic cycles, which are only generically
referred to? Right. Well, generic, well, I'm not sure what I mean non-generically, so let me just restrict to a generic case, in which case they're the same as you said. So I'm not sure about the non-generic case. I need to be careful in that. But most of the time I have 20 cycles. Right, so if I make sure that I'm just talk about the examples where the EA bundles are smooth, so if I embed the second churn class so it splits as 12-12, say, then I'm certainly in good shape there.
Are you saying that you're talking examples where EA is smooth?
I'm certainly happy with those. Now, when I go away from those so that the Picard lattice of the K3 is bigger, I'm not quite sure what happens, but I'm sure we can generalize this. But to keep people happy, at the moment I should restrict to having unbroken E8 gauge symmetry. Sorry, completely broken E8 gauge symmetry. So let's recap what we've done. I've taken H3 of the Calabi-Yau threefold over the integers, and I've somehow associated this with the second cohomology, well, part of the second cohomology of the K3 surface over the integers, just the transcendental part, say. Now, this is, well, it's certainly, we've managed to do what we wanted to do. We managed to line up the moduli spaces perfectly. I didn't tell you about the vector bundle structure, but it works out fine. All the vector moduli work out fine. The vector bundle moduli work out fine. We've managed to get the deformations of the K3 surface. They work out fine. And at least 20 directions in the B field space, they work out fine too. So we've done what we wanted to do. But what's nice, I think, is that we've actually got a bit more out of this. We can now try and push this map away from the limit, because we know that this space of two cycles in the K3 surface, as far as string theory is concerned, this naturally lives in this space of zero cycles, two cycles, and four cycles in the K3 surface. And I know that if I do any isometry of this lattice in string theory, if I mix up if I do any symmetry, any element of O of H star S of the integers should be an invariant of string theory. So whatever my moduli space map is, it had better respect this symmetry here. Now this should be highly constraining on the way that I do this hypermultiplet match. And as I said, this is work in progress, because at this stage I'm not quite sure what to do next. But this is a step forward. Being able to find the lattice of cycles on the K3 surface and embed it in a natural way in the lattice of three cycles in the Calabria threefold. So at this stage we start doing quantum geometry to get the full action on H star. Okay, I better stop there. I've run out of time. Any questions, or have I managed to puzzle all of you completely? Well, I mean, I can, in any explicit example, I can explicitly tell you what they are, because I know exactly what the Herzenbruch surfaces were there, and I know exactly what the discriminant locus of the bad fibers is, and that's enough to tell you what the threefold is.
Can you decompose them into a sort of building block, primitive building block? This is very similar to the surface case. You have elliptic vibration that you can decompose them into rational surface, like you say, doing sub-fibers on one by one.
Well, I guess, I mean, in each vertical direction in this vibration, I am turning a K3 surface into two rational elliptic surfaces. So I guess I am doing that for every surface, but I'm doing it for a whole pencil of surfaces. Yep. Well, I know that my moduli space of B fields looked like, well, I mean, to be precise, I had the moduli space on the K3 side, which looked like this. That is part of my moduli space, and I naturally embed it in part of H3 X over the inches. That's the map between the Calabria threefold and the. Sorry? These are both just tori as far as I'm concerned. I'm just mapping one torus into another torus. So I'm just mapping one lattice to another lattice. So I don't think it's that outrageous what I'm doing. The outrageous step is where I try to make it respect this proof of invariances, which is quite strong.
Your X is singular, so it has an infinitesimal structure. It has some like two high structures in H3.
Yeah, that's true. No. Well, no, this is only in the limit. This is only when this is x1 union x2. Yeah. When I'm not in the limit, this won't work quite well. Actually, the fact that this doesn't match up when we go away from the degeneration, by the way, is what shows there must be alpha prime corrections to the moduli space of the hadronic string on the K3 surface. You mean on the hadronic side?
No, the hadronic side is the alpha prime correction.
Right, so I've got.
I mean, alpha prime correction on the hadronic side don't involve the base, but involve
the. Not sure if I understand your question. I've got some kind of Wall-Cheat instanton type thing, which must be. It's like rational curves, but it's not.
Right, on the
Well, the type 2 knows about that exactly. It's like the mirror symmetry. That it maps to something to do with the complex structure on X, sorry, on the Clavier threefold site. But that didn't get any quantum corrections, so long as I had a weakly coupled string. So it's just like mirror symmetry, but instead of rational curves, I've got now something to do with bundles. Yeah.
It's not obvious to me that the general element of O of H star is going to preserve the fact that the transcendental lattice is right.
Well, no, it won't. I mean, I can start exchanging two cycles with zero cycles. So this is, I mean, this invariance is two duality, this is quantum symmetry. So I'm trying to impose quantum symmetries on the moduli space of hypermorph, but... So all this statement about classical geometry is not going to work. Sorry? Well, it was just... It happened mainly because in my construction of this boundary point on the moduli space, I insisted that the K3 surface was an elliptic vibration with a section.
Right.
So the Picard number had to be 2. I don't think so. I think it was kind of this 20 was kind of an artifact of the boundary point in moduli space I went to. I mean, this this moduli space knows about all 22 deformations of the B field, but when I went to this specific point in the on the boundary, I lost two of them. Well. Yeah, but I was assuming I wasn't at one of those points. As I said, I'm not quite sure what happens when the Picard number of the K3 surface is more than 2. It should be a simple enough question to answer. I just haven't done it yet. But if I assume I do have a Picard number of 2, then everything I said is fine. And I don't think I'm missing anything.
Yeah, I think it might be more accurate to call it a complement of
Right. That might well be it. Right. Well, they can be or they cannot be. You can have new two cycles which are restrictions from H2 and H3 in some cases. Right. No, if they have a curve of, say, I2 or I3 fibers, then that... Oh, right, okay.
So what was the reason for the transcendental cycle?
It was just the kernel. I just wanted the kernel of this map. It's really the complement of the base of the fiber, which happens to be the transcendental lattice in this case. I call it transcendental lattice. Yeah.
Just a general question. What kind of mathematical predictions come out of this heteroid type 2?
Well, for example, if we knew what the new Wilczek instantons like, we could count them. But I don't know what they are at the moment. If the thing which replaces rational curves is the alpha prime instanton correction, if we knew what... Yeah. Then we could count them, whatever they are. But I don't know what they are. Sorry? Well, no, I don't think so, because these corrections have to go away when we do the tangent bundle case. If I make the E8 bundle equal to the tangent bundle, we know these instanton corrections go away, so the instantons must know about the bundle data somehow.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Even if we make the bundle into the tangent bundle, it can
contain
the full point theory that it restricts the tangent bundle. Yeah, if I just restrict... Yeah. I expect these corrections to go away for the tangent bundle. Somehow. Okay.
Did you get information about
this? Right. Well, if I know the global properties of this map, I can also work out the lambda type instanton corrections on the to a site. So yes, I can also find normal, more, I can find instant arms and string coupling. I can count those two. So this is better than the mirror symmetry. I'm counting two. I'm counting instant arms on both sides now, as opposed to just one. Well, if I could do it, I would. In principle, I'm doing. Right. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a very rich structure. This all this stuff about either n equals two theories in four dimensions, or n equals one theories in six dimensions. There's an awful lot of structure there. And you can do all kinds of things. Oh, and I should add one more comment. I meant to emphasize this. This is, I've done half the story. This is for the EA cross EA string. There should be another picture which is different for the spin 32 over Z2 string. Now, we know what the stable degeneration is in that case, but we don't know how to do, we don't know how to identify the moduli space of the vector bundles. So that's as yet an unsolved problem, but should be doable.